Okay, so upon a second listen, I think that, you know, the beginning still doesn't do it for me, but the chorus, you know, when the brass kind of comes in, it's a bit better than I was giving it credit for before we started listening to it.
I feel like you almost have to listen to it out of the context of the album. Yeah, makes it a lot better.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like
especially
been...
after Sold. It does not fit after Sold.
That's very true. I didn't even realize all that the rest Sold of the songs, the track before it.
Yeah, all the rest of the songs seem to flow into each other at least a little bit. Like, there's a logical kind of tracking to it, but not Sold to Fair Verona.
This is the song, and this is not an insult, but imagine this song playing in
He's
the background.
He's got both hands up, ladies and gentlemen.
The Smiths just played. Your high school sweetheart is in the corner. Like, it's very much
She's
like
smarter than you.
Like
She's
a
not talking
Fault
to you
in
anymore.
Our Stars, Wes Anderson vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I felt like that from a lot of the album.
And like Romeo
Perks
and Juliet.
Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yeah. Romeo and Juliet.
Perks of Being a Wallflower. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Romeo and Juliet was the first story of that kind.
Oh, you know? Definitely.
It was
big
the
simp
first
energy.
Like emo teen.
Big simp
no
energy.
One no one understands me.
Yes, yeah, so, very much.
And like he's playing into like those archetypes, obviously. Like the one lyric that stood out to me that I've been trying to make sense of, like what he's trying to say with it, and I can't fit it into the rest of the album at all, because he says cut and paste the stars into our hearts is what they do. So rather like Romeo and Juliet are like the star-crossed lovers, right? Like they were fated to like, but the gods designed that like their story would play out. But according to Dan Mangan, no, like, they chose their fate. They went out and they, like, cut and paste those stars. And I don't know how that fits into anything
Ooh,
else.
Fate versus free will debate.
Yeah, fate versus free will in an album that doesn't bring that
I
up.
I was
going to
say,
else.
I think that's, like, I feel like a broken record. Boom. Okay.
That's getting cut.
Yeah. No, I feel like I've been repeating myself a lot on this point, but the shallow nature of some of the topics that get into, which are very heavy, I feel like the metaphors tend to not give as much to those topics as I wish they could. Like, I wanted more to grasp onto sometimes.
Yeah.
What
I
was
agree.
The song that we were talking about a little while ago where it was being in a sad relationship is good for, like, my sad music? I can't remember.
Indie Queens Are Waiting.
So, like,
baby.
I think Indie Queens Are Waiting and Fair Verona have more in common.
Yes. Like, those two songs are definitely in conversation with each other.
Indie Queens Are Waiting is the best song on this
it's
album,
so
hands down.
It's so good.
Okay, yeah. I think we can all agree that was a great track.
And, like Fair Verona is interesting when viewed through that lens. Because, like, Indie Queen... It's all based on, like, the whole song is each, like, lover questioning the other. They're all, like, they're always asking questions back and forth throughout the song. But in this song, like, there's no questions. It's just statements. The only question that he asks, and, like, it's the only thing that is similar to Indie Queens with a preoccupation with image is, like, and it's, like, in the chorus, so he repeats it a lot. Like, if they go down too easy... I hope our friends remember us and think about us. So, like, even in death, even after, like, you and the person you love have died, the thing that you're concerned with is, well, like, how many, like, Instagram posts are going to be, are we going to have about Romeo and Juliet dying, you know? Like, how are people going to remember us?
Right.
It was hard, too, because especially a lot of, like, the really powerful imagery in Romeo and Juliet is how specific people's actions can stop a lot of violence or change the way people have perceptions of each other, and it's more of an outside look as opposed to like an inside look, and it isn't as important about Romeo and Juliet and like specifically who they are as people. It's more about their actions and how those actions impact their community and their family and their church. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you could have done a lot with that because he plays so much with image and like how image is impactful. I was like, if you were looking at, like, how people remember Romeo and Juliet instead of just being like, oh, God, I hope they remember me when I get stabbed.
Yeah, and, like I think it's funny, like, look at this song, like, Fair Verona compared to, like, the Decemberists' O Valencia.
Oh,
which
hell
is
yeah.
The same song. It is the same song.
Yes.
But rather than, like this is obviously, like, a love song. Well, O Valencia is, like, transfixed with the violence inherent to the story and, like, all of the bloodshed that happens because of XYZ happening.
The spectacle becomes the motivation for change instead of the spectacle looking inward and not
but, like,
being...
specifically, like, causing harm mm-hmm. is the one thing that like Colin is concerned about with that song.
I felt like this goes back to what you guys were saying about Fair Verona. Is there was times where I was catching myself lending a lot of credence and giving a lot to the writer of the songs, like Dan himself, like giving a lot of credit to him for some of the like topics that were coming up and being like, oh, maybe this is coming across this way because it's like these like step-by-step processes, if it was like this mathematical equation that he came up with in order to make me feel a certain way. And I want to know how you guys feel about that, like how intentional you thought some of these things were, or if you thought it was more just like honesty on a stick.
This boy's talking about author intent. Get this author intent shit out of here.
No one cares. But
go back to Russia, Dean.
I think we can
The formalists are waiting.
I think we can talk about though, like you can see just by the fact, like, you guys crap on his over-the-top metaphors. Well, okay, not you guys. Chancellor.
Just Chancellor.
Specific metaphors. Not over-the-top necessarily, but rather the use of specific metaphors to give across a certain
the
image.
The lion was Jesus the whole time.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry.
But those over-the-top metaphors, especially when you get into songwriting, you don't see that unless the songwriter is being intentional with it. So I think that there is a sort of intentionality with, like, how he's trying to make you feel.
Right.
That I think that, like, especially with songwriting, because you can do that so much with the music itself, when you bring the lyrics into it and, like, look at the lyricist on their own and how they do that, if it's, like, that intentional, you've got to think that.
I think a lot with Baskets, too, just thinking about it a little bit more, the metaphors that he uses are really overt, but they're all about something that's missing, and he doesn't have that persona as an old man yet, like Dean was explaining. So he doesn't yet understand what that will look like for him, although I think he would like to like envision it through this song, like being married and like having children and having all this other stuff, whether or not he has a white picket fence, very debatable. but I think a lot of like those overt metaphors are a way for him to fill in for a persona that he doesn't understand yet or hasn't built yet or doesn't understand through like the lens of the like, music ability, which we're talking a lot about in this album. It doesn't have a place with like fans or with his own stuff. It would have only kind of a face with like his closest relationship and how that's working. I think that's why a lot of like the metaphors are like, I think you would say like they're grating. Like you're like, I don't like that he's describing for so long the puzzle with the edges and the corners, but the pieces and some are missing. And
it came across as very like, purposefully, like image-wise, purposefully quirky and playing to a certain audience. And it's like, I don't necessarily enjoy, maybe this is a fault in my own. We'll probably discover this the more we listen to albums.
We'll discover it when he picks his album.
Yeah, right. I don't like feeling like someone has to over-explain something to me when I'm listening to music, necessarily. Like
I feel like, though, based on what I know about you, you like more complex music. Like, I'm talking about, like, the actual, like, instrumental part of it.
Right.
So I think maybe for, like, someone like me, I like complex music, but I also love, like, lyrics.
Yeah.
So when you bring that together, like, that's why maybe you and I are having the different responses to it. Because like the explaining through the music.
Yeah, yeah. I like feeling like I'm having a panic attack while the guy just stalks about, like, over top of it. He just says, depression for 30 minutes and I'm like, yeah, that was like lyrical genius, you know what I mean?
That guy gets
he gets me. But that's the thing. I think you're right. I feel like a lot of my biases on this album, because the more I hear you guys talk about it and the more you explain it, I'm like, no, yeah, you're right. Like I hope it doesn't come across as me in any way arguing with you guys, but rather just like my first impressions on the album, because I've learned a hell of a lot from you guys talking about it.
So with that, do you want to move on to Indie Queens?
I think we have to now.
Yeah, I think
Indie Queens. Can we list the Indie Queens for a little bit before we talk about it?
Down the road and on the right-hand side, there's a place I sometimes like to dine. Coffee refills far as I can see. I'll be waking. Are you watching me? Are you watching? Are you? Are you watching? I'm just waiting to see. and your days are numbered. Cause my days are numbered too.
Are we cool now?
Are we cool now?
Are we cool now?
Are we cool? Bus down to the local record store. Buy something to make you like me more. Indie queens and tatted east side punks. They are listening and always waiting. And are you watching? Are you? Are you watching? We're just waiting to see. Your days are numbered. Cause my days are numbered too.
Are we cool now?
Are we cool now?
Are we cool now?
Are we cool? Piss you off. And I know, I know, I know. But I was poking and sort of prodding and kind of hoping and always watching for a reaction. Reaction, reaction, reaction. Are you watching, watching? Are you watching? Or just waiting to see?
Indie Queens Are Waiting. This was my favorite, like, is my favorite song still, was my favorite song on this album for a long, long time. Because, like I was saying, like, I was definitely, like, that, like, fake poser indie dude for a long time. And, like, the lyric, buy something to make you love me more at the record shop was exactly how I felt. Like, in that romantic relationships are just an extension of the music that you listen to. Oh.
I love that. Was that a feeling at some?
No, tell us more, Dean.
That's universal, right?
Yeah, it's
no.
still a mood.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, we're gonna get all Freudian in this boy. No. Like, I want to hear more about that because notably, Dean is only slightly younger than the rest of us, but maybe he's had a different experience when it comes to like music and growing up.
I didn't really grow up. I was sort of born into a vat.
Yeah,
but no, like my experience with listening to music is listening to music alone in my car driving around at night, and that's like all of my like preconceived notions have been born out of that.
Well, that's Same. This album for me.
Exactly.
Yeah, I used true. To listen to this. I had to drive an hour to and from band practice. Not a cool band. a marching band. I was in a marching band an hour away, but. I used to have to drive an hour to and from this practice every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And, like, this was the soundtrack and Les Mis.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, like, I think, like, that's what you just described is, like, this whole album for me. It'd be, like, 2 a.m. and I'd be driving on the highway, empty highway in Florida by myself, just listening to the Indie Queens Are Waiting and having, like, emotional responses.
Just you and Mothman on those empty Florida highways.
Well, okay. I can see that, like, for sure, that the topic of the song, like you were saying, is very much about, like, how music affects, like, your relationships with other people.
Like, not only affects, but informs. Like, what they know about what being in a relationship is like is completely drawn from the music they listen to.
Which, oh, yeah. Which I think is still a thing for a lot of younger people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I remember being in high school and being like, that chick's wearing a Nirvana shirt. Hope she isn't a poser. I'm going to ask her what the third track on Nevermind is.
Oh, you're the worst person.
Oh, I was terrible.
But like,
I was in high school.
I don't care.
I'm allowed to be.
Like, even beyond like just like connecting with people through music, like, when you're young, everything you know about romantic relationships, you learned either through, like, A, blockbuster movies,
media,
or B,
yeah.
Like, the songs you listen to. And you're like, okay, I know that, like, a relationship is good because XYZ happens.
Yeah.
And, like,
she lifts her legs when she kisses me.
Well, yeah, and, like,
it's
fraught and, like...
she flies.
Yeah. Like, it's fraught and we fight all the time and we're alcoholic and we live in a, like, ramshackle house in Tallahassee.
We throw glasses at the wall, yeah.
And that's how I know that it's real.
Yeah.
You know?
Every day we watch 500 Days of Summer.
Then you realize, like, none of that is how relationships actually function.
Yeah, and like that's part of growing up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I feel like if you don't like the same music, it's not gonna work out long term sometimes.
And like he addresses that here, like at the end of the song, he talks about how they are listening. And the they he's referring to are the artists that they listen to, are the indie queens and the crust punks or whatever.
Right.
Like they are listening to us fight and us question each other and us talk. Like our whole relationship is constantly being interrogated by the music that we listen to.
Also, like, a little further than just, like, the music that we listen to aspect of it, I think there's... I don't know how involved you guys were in the local music scenes in your areas. But
not at all.
We only had ska bands.
Okay. Oh, that's pretty sick, though.
I'm not joking. Just ska. Weston, Florida, folks.
Man, Florida, known for its great ska. But growing up as a teenager in, like, a music scene, in a couple of bands that literally went nowhere and were for no good reason whatsoever, but there's definitely an aspect of everything you do being a spectacle and other people having to weigh in on everything that you do.
Yeah.
Because it makes up who you are and what your persona is, and that's your selling point. And none of that is explicit, though. It's all very, like... it's a subconscious thing that you're kind of marketing yourself for who you're around so that they kind of see who you want them to see.
Yeah, right? No, like, and that's exactly it. Like,
yeah.
Like, the chorus of this song has them both asking each other over and over again, are we cool?
Yeah, yeah.
Are we cool now?
Right. Because
it's not just, like, are we cool? Like, are we okay in this relationship? Are we, like, not fighting anymore? Are we cool? But also, like, are we cool in the scene?
Yeah, yeah.
Are, like, we hip? Because if we're
impressive?
Not, this relationship isn't working.
Right.
Like, the health of the relationship and how cool they are it's the same question.
Right, right. It's like a power couple in celebrity dumb. I don't know what it's called when people are famous, but it's like a power couple except within, like, a specific community, right? Which was certainly a thing.
Yeah.
Even on smaller scale scenes. So I can imagine the indie scene in Vancouver.
No, your girlfriend starts listening to Ariana Grande. Done.
Yeah.
Drop her.
Out.
Get out of here.
Get out of here. I only listen to Kenny G in this house.
He's not lying.
Can we talk for a hot sec about the music in this song? Because I think it's the most powerful music in, like, instrumental part in the whole album, personally.
Really?
So, okay, to start off, there's, like, a very strategic pause at about, like, 30 seconds in, and it just, like, puts you on the edge of your seat for the rest of the song, in my opinion. And I really appreciate that. And I also think, like, maybe it's because I'm just a sucker for piano, but the little trills of piano that just come out of nowhere add such an interesting layer to this that really, without it, it wouldn't have worked. Because I think it kind of matches that. You've got, like, guitar and piano kind of having a conversation while the male and female voices are having that conversation.
Yeah. But also, like, the voices do have, like, an interplay, a sort of call and response with the piano and with the underlying instrumental. In that, like, literally, he is in conversation with the music that he's listening to.
Yeah, it's good.
Definitely. You can feel that a lot throughout the whole album, actually. I wrote it down a few times that, like, if there was a vocal track, it wouldn't be nearly as good. And if there was an instrumental track, it wouldn't be nearly as good. But, like, them together makes a very, like, a very, you know, well-cut tune. Like, it does a really good job.
The suits had come for me. I found alternatives to honesty. Body and soul were bought and sold, patented and out of reach. So I reach, but it hurts, it kills, it screams, and it fills my heart with chills. And I take my pills, but I'm still tired of sleeping with the light on. It keeps the hair out of my eyes. Back it up and send it home. For just one stab at the good life, that's enough. And I'm so up all my wretched thoughts and left them out for the less fortunate. Now at the gate I'll skip the queue. Life's not living unless you're sure to make it through. But now it hurts, it kills, it screams, and it fills my heart with chills. And I take my pills, but I'm still sleeping with the light on. Oh. But if it keeps the hair out of my eyes, pack it up and send it home. For just one stab at the good life, that's enough. And I'm so
about the track Soul. How was everyone's first impressions of this track? What did you think? What did you get a takeaway from it?
Okay, I love the ending.
You love the ending?
Like the little clappy bit at the ending?
Oh, the hand bone section. Yeah. That was sick.
I had that written down in my notes as so much clapping, 5 exclamation marks and question marks. I didn't understand how it like fit in, but like I was really there.
Yeah. Like my small brain really liked that part because it was like, oh yeah, in SpongeBob where they're laughing, they start hand boning and stuff like that. And I was like, that was hilarious. And then I was like, this song is dope. But like I actually, I really liked it. I really liked what he was talking about in this song. And I want to kind of get into that a little bit. How do you guys feel?
Yeah.
I feel like it's really in line with everything else that goes on within this album, which we've discussed a lot.
This might be the
lot,
thesis song of
you think
this
so?
Album.
I think so, yeah.
Like, it's very, like, a concern with, like, persona and, you know, audience and how, like, you present yourself to an audience, especially, like, in a capitalist world where you need to sell yourself in order to survive.
Right, right. I agree with that one.
I also really like the line, so I gave up all my wretched thoughts and left them out for the less fortunate. That one's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, you're right, yeah, every artist is just It's like, oh, terrible thoughts. Let me put it onto paper and sing it in front of people.
Right.
That lyric. Oh, I read that completely differently. The people that leave like cream corn in the donation box. Like, I'm just going to leave all my shitty stuff for people feeling less fortunate.
I read that like all the wretched thoughts, all of like the actual ideas and thoughts that he has to abandon. Like, because he's packaging himself. He's trying to, like, market to a mass audience.
It's pageantry.
Yeah, he's like, I have to become, like, this shiny, like, PC, like, completely inoffensive person if I'm going to become successful.
That's fair.
That's how I read that.
Really, has he done that successfully?
I think that's a lot of the problem.
Well, he's selling records.
That's true. I think that was a lot of the problems we had with some people, like, how disingenuous or ingenuous.
Yeah.
I find it very bold when people decide to start their career writing music about writing music. I find it even more bold when people jump into it after they've released one album, because then it's like, he probably has had a lot of experience working with other people and stuff like that, but the first thought in your head is, boy, you're just beginning, right? Like a lot of like, you know, it made me think of listening to David Bowie or something like that, and like a lot of his songs are about how he has to put himself on in front of people. But then you look at his career and it's like, this is a big ass career, right? Like, it's like, who it's coming from.
No, I think this might just be like a personal pet peeve that I have, but I hate meta narrative at all. Like, I hate like stories about stories. I hate music about music.
Right.
Like, I don't like, I still listen to the, like, I watch like Community and I love it. And I like, I listened to this album and I really liked it. But like as a principle, I dislike it because it's just masturbatory. I don't think there's anything wrong with like sort of meta observations and meta critiques within a genre or within a medium or whatever. The problem is, and especially today, I feel that everything has to be about itself. Like every, like all the new like Disney like remakes that come out, they have to interrogate what it used to be and what it is now. And like no one can just tell a story. It has to be a story about a story. But yeah, it's not bad in practice. It's bad in volume.
Okay,
where,
but
like,
I have...
we can't actually just engage with anything on a human level. It has to be from a media critique level.
It's called postmodernism, baby.
I hate it.
I have like a question on that front though, because it's one thing, in my opinion, to do that when you're someone like Dan Mangan, and I can bet you anything, like, this was the first thing that I ever heard from him, and I guarantee that, like, he probably didn't make a ton of money off this album. So when you're looking at art, when it's something on a low level like that, and it's self-reflective, and not necessarily for mass capitalistic gain, is it okay, because art is supposed to be an expression of yourself?
But I guess, like, the whole time, he's not even struggling with the art aspect of it. It seems like he's struggling with the marketability aspect of it. I'm reading into it wrong. But
no,
like,
I agree, but I think it's like a self-reflected album in the sense that he's, you know, clearly he's released his first album, had some issues with this whole process, and then needed to be self-reflective in the second album to kind of come to terms with this. And I think that, you know, you're kind of comparing it to Game of Thrones, but that was like a $1 billion industry.
Right.
Versus this is not like, this is like maybe, you know, barely getting by kind of salary kind of artwork, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think like you could boil down my argument maybe why would you want to put out an album about being a singer-songwriter? How are people going to connect to that? How is that, like, meaningful art for people? But the counter to that is, and I think it's more true with our generation than any other generation, is that all of us think that, or at least consider ourselves in one way, whether we admit it or not, to be artists. Social media and self-expression and, like, personal brands, you know, like images of ourselves that we sell to audience either for like high number of likes or for actual money. We're all doing that all the time.
So on that note, follow us on Instagram, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, please subscribe.
Smash that like button.
But like
personal brand, I don't think a lot of people see their own crafting of their personal brand as a piece of art. So if you talk to like social media influencers, they don't consider themselves artists. They'll say content creators, but they don't like call themselves creatives.
I don't think they would. They wouldn't call themselves that. But I think like in some like dirty recess of your mind, like you still think like, oh, I'm creating something. I'm making something. I am creative. I am an artist. Like not everyone, but I feel like our generation more than any other like has this fixation with being a creator and being an artist. And especially like this song in particular sold. Like Gen X, like our parents are like the whole Gen X thing was selling out, right? You never wanted to sell out. You wanted to be authentic.
I just like to point out that my parents are not Gen X.
Oh, okay, well,
I think maybe some
of our parents are Gen X. We're not going to say who. But like the Gen X thing was just this complete mortification with selling out and not being authentic, not being real, and giving in to the man. And the millennial response, like if you could see Dan Mangan as like the millennial response to that,
I would say Dan Mangan is the Gen X.
Yeah? Because like that, like I see this song as a complete refutation of that, of like you know, not, he's not like, oh, should I sell out? Should I like, you know, write for the New Yorker or like whatever Gen X people did? I don't know. am I going to like lose who I am? Am I going to stop being authentic? He's like, no, I'm sold. Like from the get go.
Yeah. But like, it's like I think it's very clear. He's being a bit satirical about
it. He's being satirical about it, but like,
whereas I feel like if you bring this into context to your whole like millennial response thing, I think the millennial response to the idea of selling out is rather than selling out to the man, you become the man.
Yeah. You make your own job. Yeah.
The part that I found interesting about your response to songs about songs is that you said that the emotional tie that we can get from it, like the part that we can grasp from it, is that we kind of see ourselves as also being the artist. But I think it's more just like seeing ourselves as being incredibly vulnerable and self-critical, which I think is much more rampant than necessarily seeing ourselves as artists. So I think like a common theme amongst a lot of people our age, even older, like people older than us, probably people younger than us, are like incredibly critical of the own work that they put out. So I think like when you listen to a songwriter write a song about writing songs, you look at it and you're like, yeah, I've been in positions like that where the thing that I'm doing is just not even close to what I wanted it to be. And it ends up being also a part of the product that you receive, right? So I think there's like an honesty to it and like kind of like a tearing down the walls instead of just putting on this facade and this face. But it's also about that, right? So it's kind of hard when, you know, the song about writing about songs is about writing about songs. Like there's like three layers to it, and you're listening and you're like, I don't know where you're at, my guy. Like I really liked that track, but at the same time it's only four tracks in, and this was like an earlier introduction to the idea of him critiquing his own songwriting, but not being critical of music, because he did that with Indie Queens. But still, it's it's one of those things where it's like, do we feel closer to this person because they're talking about it this way, or are they talking about it this way because they want to distance themselves from it? And I think that's kind of where I was sitting on with that song.
I think a lot of the stuff that I had with this was just not anything close to what anybody was saying, that I just really enjoyed like the satirical, like violent aspects of it, and the way the music was a lot punchier, I guess. Like there was like a little bit of that rock influence, a little bit of interesting stuff. I was talking about how there was a little bit of a Justin Townes Earl vibe for me, at least, because I listen to his stuff a lot, where it's like the satirical kind of funny kind of country stuff where it's, you're taking an idea and you're playing with it a lot, and that's where the satire comes from. I think the song would have been a lot more, I guess, I would have remembered it more if it had not been an idea that was rehashed like so often throughout the album, even though I think the song probably is the most succinct and does it the best out of a lot of the ones that we listen to. I just didn't have a lot. I was just confused a lot musically. Like, the clapping was weird for me, and it was like a banger.
I loved it.
But I just, it was a hard take for me, especially listening to it in between Indie Queens and Fair Verona, which I both really enjoyed. I didn't have as much of a connection with the song, I guess. But it was still like, it was an interesting blend the way he plays a lot with different types of music, because he like has there's xylophone in indie queens, there's a bunch of different piano and guitarist work in Fair Verona, and like that droning like oboe sound. And so I think he's playing a lot with the music that he's doing, especially in this little part of the album. And so I really enjoyed that it was a break from like the slower sound that he was doing, mm-hmm. to definitely be a lot punchier. But I don't have a lot to say about the lyrics.
All right, I think we moving on to the line, "Sold my soul to the devil for a nice penmanship," in Tina's glorious comeback. Yeah. It seems like a good segue from "Sold." Shall we listen to Tina's glorious comeback?
Let's do it.
Downtown Vancouver, digging through your bag, ripping out the pages of the local music mag. You missed the show last summer, but now you've got your chance. They're playing at the Railway with another emo band. I'm ambitious when giving up. Never thinking clear enough. But we're not Elvis anymore. We're not Frankie in his wild years. We're not Tina's glorious comeback. We're not us. We're not us. Devil for nice penmanship, and now I write real pretty, but I'm starting to regret it. If all this was easy, it wouldn't matter how it ends. I'm ambitious when giving up. Never thinking clear enough. But we're not Elvis anymore. We're not Frankie in his wild years. We're not Tina's glorious comeback. We're not us. We're not us. We're not us anymore. We're not us. We're not us anymore. We're not us. We're not us.
I think like this is one of my favorite tracks on the album. I don't honestly know why. I think it's just there's something about the title that I just love. It just seems so, you know, Tina's yeah. glorious comeback. It's who's Tina? What is she coming back from?
It's a stellar title, but we know who Tina is, right?
No.
Dean. We're so dumb.
Is it Tina Help Turner? Help
us. Tina Turner.
Yeah, oh, I thought it was Tina Turner.
Yeah, her glorious comeback.
Yeah, because they're even talking about like Frankie Goes to Hollywood and stuff like that.
That song, that lyric actually, I don't know if it's about Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Who did you think it was?
Because there's a Tom Waits album called Frankie's Wild Years.
Oh, well, yeah. That'd probably be way... Yeah. It'd be cool if it was Frankie Goes to Hollywood, though.
That's what I thought at first, too. And I was like, oh, awesome.
I was like, that's sick. Yeah.
Relax. That's what I'll do for my turn. I'll make everybody listen to a Tom Waits album. Be really fun for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but like, it's this still leaves the question of why is Dan Mangan writing a song about Tina Turner?
Well, because like, and again, this goes back to what I think the thesis of the album is, which is persona as identity as music, like that, those three ideas and how they blend, because he like you know, it's just him talking to who we presume is like a romantic partner of his, and they're like at some low point in their relationship, and he says the whole chorus, we're not Elvis anymore, We're not Frankie in his wild years. We're not Tina's glorious comeback. We're not us. So, yeah. Like, he's, like, we're not all of these, like, these titans in music, the giants whose shoulders he doesn't stand on. We're not being those people. And because we're not being those people, we're not being ourselves. Because the only way we can think of ourselves is through the music.
I don't know. I would push back a little bit where I would think that you're like 98% of what you said I agree with, but I think it has a lot more to do with like the gaze of the audience, I think, affects him a lot more. And that it's not just persona music person, it's like persona music person mirror. So like how the people like looking at him influence how he is as a person. And I think he would like to think that they don't influence him as a person. But the way that he's talking about, like, we're not us, there's a definite feeling of another person or, like, an other in their relationship with them. And it's almost like the gaze or, like, the audience is influencing them and, like, making the relationship either, like, not as good or, like, maybe it made it a lot better and maybe now they're not getting that attention and they're stuck in kind of that spot where they're not the subject to the gaze and they don't understand how to act as somebody who is being looked at. And so it was just, like, an interesting thing where it was neat to look at the way that he seems to think about he's building his own identity, but he also ironically doesn't seem to realize that he's being built up by the people that are listening to his music, which is what he's writing about so often, and about how that changes the way he sees things. But for me, it was a lot about his relationship with the audience and how that audience, like, whether it's very large or very small, or whether or not it's your spouse or, like, your girlfriend and who's looking at you, that changes the way you act. Yeah, I think it's, like, mostly that, but then also, like, there's, like, this gross little gremlin in the corner, which is, like, how everybody demands that he behave on, like, social media or on the stage or, like, in person.
The only thing I was going to say about this song is he does a sweet call-out to emo bands in the Vancouver scene. Some of the groups that I was in, like, when we used to play in my whole hometown, we would always get put on the bill with all these, like, heavy metal bands. And we were not heavy metal at all. And then when I was in, like, an actual, like, hardcore metal band, we would always get put on the bill with all these indie bands. It just has to do with, like, how out of whack and disorganized these, like, smaller music scenes are, even in places where they are incredibly popular, but they just don't break out as much, such as Vancouver. So, yeah, I think, like, I don't know, that part gave it a little bit of, like, human aspect to it, where I was like, yeah, like, you know, we've all been I would like to think a lot of people have been to a show where you're like, why the hell are these people on the same bill together? Which is, like, what got me thinking about, like, what does he say? This isn't us, or?
Yeah, we're not us.
We're not us, which made me think a lot about, like you said, like, the gaze from other people.
So a standalone line that I love in this, just even on its own, is I'm ambitious when giving up.
I was just about to bring that up.
I feel like if MSN was still a thing when this album came out, that would have been my, like, little, like, byline or whatever.
Yeah, it would be like currently listening to System of a Down and Dan Mangan.
No, but going to Warp Tour.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I want to put I'm ambitious when giving up in, like, quotes on top of a picture of a sunset.
I feel like this quote could have been on the album cover.
Well, let's take a look at the final track before we do our final thoughts and our final goodbyes.
Decide to be alone until it's cold enough to hibernate. So let it drift into the snow. It's where she chooses how to operate. Might be time to pack her in. Set the sails and just get hauled away. Maybe east or something. West was overrated anyway. The storm's coming down. These old walls are wearing thin. There's an ache to this town. And something's gotta give if we're digging for gold and coming up dry. just a matter of time, just a matter of time.
Set the sail.
All right, set the sail. I think I said this at the beginning, but I think this is the most perfect ending to this record, musically wise, especially because you've got that hollow piano sound almost that is so. It just like wraps up that kind of theme of like feeling like you've laid everything out there and everybody expects all this stuff from you and you don't know how to respond. And, like, that kind of theme that we keep talking about. And then you end it with, yeah, this, like, hollow piano on its own with a vocal. And it's just so raw. And it sounds like something you'd hear, you know, a gruff bartender play on an old piano while they're closing the bar at night waiting for that one last person to leave, you know?
Not speaking from experience.
Never. I've never experienced
that. Yeah, that's never happened in real life.
You before. Also have this ending that... it just kind of comes out of nowhere and it doesn't, it fits in with the rest of the song, but it also just kind of takes different pieces from the rest of the album to kind of end off on this little instrumental bit. Because when you actually look at the lyrics and the song itself, it really only lasts for maybe like just under 2 minutes. And then you've got that kind of strange instrumental track to like round it up. So this song would never work as a single.
No.
You never want to listen to it as like a one-off or on its own. It really has to be kind of ended at the end of the album.
Yeah, unless you were making an incredibly sad playlist. Because like it's pretty,
that's
it's
true.
Like just toss that one in there and have those feels. But when it comes to this album as a whole, yeah, it's definitely like a bookend or however yeah. you said earlier.
Like
I thought you gave the perfect description of it.
It's a perfect little companion piece to Road Regrets because, like we said previously, they're both about leaving and, like, travel. You know, they're like, the two perfect instruments in the indie singer-songwriter's toolbox. You have, yeah. like, tar-driven, I don't want to say anthem, but approaching anthem versus the very slow, sad piano melody. These are the two tools that you use. Everything else is just sort of in between those two extremes. There's a line in All the King's Men where he talks about how a man is not himself when he's in a car, when he's traveling, because you can only be yourself when you're performing yourself in front of other people. And when you're alone in a car at night, you don't exist because there's no one to be you in front of. And I think by bookending this record with these two travel songs, it's like sort of going towards the place where you have to be yourself. And then when he sets the sails, he has been himself. He's played these songs for you. You have heard them. And now he's not himself anymore. And he's leaving again.
Oh, like a transformation of a sort.
But like not really. Like,
yeah.
Because like in Road Regrets, he's there and then back again like that. And it's not like he changed. He just sort of went on this. Maybe he did. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit.
Mm-hmm.
But like for me, it's just sort of an exploration of like character and identity. And then you leave and you just sort of have to think about what's happened and whether or not you've changed.
I think you would have to really like, I think I really agree. It's he's leaving and he's no longer the artist as you see him. And you have to think a lot about whether or not you're transforming him in your own mind and changing the way you think about him as an artist, as the audience. I think this was like my favorite song on the whole album. I really, really enjoyed it because I'm a sad boy music for life. But I enjoyed how he took all the themes that he like rehashed so often lyrically and did it sonically for the last like, I don't know what, like last 30 seconds of the song, where it's the piano on an empty stage. Like the artist is no longer like perceived to be there. The way you hear the piano is like there's no one playing it even though the piano is playing. Mm-hmm. And like the final sounds with the violin through the static feels like you're listening to like a TV in another room. So like there's a performance happening, but there's no longer an artist attached to the performance. You don't get to look at that artist anymore and like make any designs on how you see them or how you feel about them because they're not there. You're just listening to the sounds. And I really, really enjoyed that like really empty soundscape because it really does feel like an empty house where somebody is playing the piano, but you're not sure who it is. You can't see them. You just kind of hear it.
Yeah, it's like they've left everything there for you and then you're stuck sitting there going, okay, how do I consume all of this that you've just left me?
Mm-hmm. Rather than a full-blown conclusion, it's more just, an emptiness, right?
Well, I think that brings us to the end of the album. We've come to the conclusion prior to this recording that rating albums is a really hard thing to do. So we're going to go with the question of, would you put this on in the car with someone you just met?
And I would. I think this is a good driving album. I'm a fan, and now that we've talked about it, I will seem very intelligent to the person that I'm driving with.
I think I would probably put it on in the car with somebody I just met, just because it's very easily like digestible. So even if you don't talk about it and you don't want to sound smart like Dean, you can still enjoy it with most people. I probably wouldn't be listening to it a lot on my own, just because I already listen to a lot of stuff that's very similar because I'm a sad boy. So I don't need any more sad boys in my life.
I don't see any appeal in trying to re-listen to this album. Even after hearing all the, you guys really opened my mind up to this album and giving it a lot more credit than I initially gave on my first impression, but it doesn't seem like anything that I would need to revisit. If someone put it on, I'd be like, yeah, I know this one, but not something I would put on my own.
Me personally, I think I would definitely put this on. I think, like I said when we introduced this, mostly for nostalgia purposes, this was there for me in a very specific time in my life. And you know when you listen to a song and it like brings you back to that moment? I have that a lot with this album. So I think that I like to listen to it because it reminds me of that kind of driving on empty roads by myself when I was in high school trying to like process my high school emotions.
This was a lot of fun, guys.
Yeah. To end off today, shall we play... as close as we can get to a communal favorite song off this album all the way through.
Ooh.
It's Indie Queens Are Waiting, folks.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page with that. We'll leave you with Indie Queens Are Waiting. Thanks for hanging with us.
Down the road and on the right hand side, there's a place I sometimes like to dine. Coffee refills far as I can see. I'll be waking. Are you watching me? Are you watching? Are you watching? I'm just waiting to see that your days are numbered. My days are numbered too.
Are we cool now?
Are we cool now?
Are we cool now?
Are we cool? Bus down to the local record store. Buy something to make you like me more. Indie Queens and Tatty D's side. They're listening and always waiting. And are you watching? Are you watching? We're just waiting to see. Your days are numbered. 'Cause my days are numbered too.
Are we cool now?
Are we cool now?
Are we cool now?
Are we cool? it's not nice to piss you off. And I know, I know, I know. But I was poking and sort of prodding and kind of hoping and always watching for a reaction, a reaction, a reaction. Are you watching, watching? Are you warm? Just waiting to see.